Several lay people are actively involved in the 13th General Assembly of the Synod of Bishops on the new evangelization. Most of these are participating as experts and auditors. Among them is Ed Peters, a lay canonist serving as an expert. He spoke to Charles Collins about his role.
Basically, canon law, which is the internal legal system of the Catholic Church, touches, to one degree or another, virtually every aspect of the Church's mission, sometimes by way of enablement, sometimes by way of restriction, sometimes definition. But any of those things can be brought up in the course of figuring out how to conduct the new evangelization. So canonical advice is always helpful sooner than later.
Can you give us an example of what a bishop might ask you as in their deliberations?
Well, in the deliberations, for example, they might talk about the restrictions or regulations or precedents for establishing and certifying new types of ministry. Would those types of things be within the authority of a bishop? Does he need the authority of the pope? Either way, what kind of training might be required? So it's nice to think through some of those kinds of more technical issues before launching off on what may be a very good idea.
If a bishop does want to do a new project, wants a new program of evangelization, can you just tell us what some of these canonical issues arise? I saw one bishop, for example, say, I want to do parish missions again. Yeah. What kind of canonical issues would arise from something like that?
Sure. The Church operates at different levels. She operates at the universal level here in the Holy See. She operates at the diocesan level. She operates at the parochial level. Those are the three main ones. Each one of those levels has an authority structure: pope, bishops, pastors. So in order for the Church to actually conduct activities, we want to know who's responsible for its oversight, who's responsible for its planning. If you have different levels of the Church kind of interfering with one another, they tend to get in each other's way. Canon lawyers can help pastors, bishops, and even popes sort through those kinds of things in a more dispassionate, forward-looking way than just, as I said earlier, just launching off and seeing what happens.
What about things such as lay movements, or a lot of the bishops have been talking about spirituality, mm-hmm. things like third order movements, things mm-hmm. like that? What are some of the canonical issues that arise from these things?
Right. Lay movements are particularly interesting because there are canons in the code on associations of the faithful, and they get divided out according to different categories. But one of the most interesting things about the 1983 code, which is the code we operate under now, is its very forward-looking enablement and call to laity to assume more responsibility in their personal lives for evangelization, for spreading the gospel in the workplace, for being models of Christian living. So actually, the more familiar laity are with the code of canon law, the more likely they're going to come across canons that encourage and in some degree authorize them to carry on the activity that they already feel called to by the Spirit anyway.
What does a layperson have to do? What rights does a layperson have to form an association for evangelization or an association for catechetics? Can you kind of give us an idea of what the rights and responsibilities of the laity are?
I can give you an idea of that, but I'd have to say we have a whole course on this, so we'll have to condense it into a few minutes. We are called by baptism to promote the gospel, to be models of Christ to the world. There are as many ways to do that as there are individually baptized Catholics. The more, however, we take on at least the appearance of officially promoting doctrine or speaking in what the public would take as the name of the Church, the more lay Catholics have to bring their activities before local ecclesiastical authority, just to make sure we're all on the same page, just to make sure that we're not inadvertently confusing other members of the faithful are confusing the public at large, and to present unity, which is, of course, one of the cardinal characteristics of the Church, unity of her message.
Changing tack just a little bit, another area that canon law is highly involved in is marriage annulments, the tribunals of the Church. A lot of the bishops have talked about how divorced and remarried people feel excluded from the Church, how this has been a very big pastoral problem in the Church. Can you tell us a little bit about what role the canonist plays in this, how to separate a pastoral sensitivity with a legal process. Can you give us more along those lines?
Yeah. Again, I'll preface it by saying we have whole courses for this for our seminarians at Sacred Heart. We need to distinguish between divorced Catholics and divorced and remarried Catholics. They are in two different categories, canonically and pastorally. The mere fact that a Catholic is divorced does not carry any immediate ecclesiastical ramifications. For example, divorced Catholics, if that's all they are, simply divorced, they can still access the sacraments, participate in parochial life, and so on. When Catholics divorce and remarry without annulment, usually before a civil magistrate, etc., then they begin to complicate their ecclesiastical status. Then they begin to make a public statement that's contrary to the Church's teaching on marriage. We presume marriage lasts forever and so on. So the first thing we need to distinguish is between simply divorced and divorced and remarried. Now, all throughout the world, of course, marriage is under pressure. It's under great pressure in Western nations because of the rise of secularism, no-fault divorce, and so on. So there's a lot of pressure on Catholics who are trying to live a married life, particularly if they're in marriages that they're struggling with. Divorce looks like a very easy, free ticket out of the problems of my life. But the Church wants them to stand to use technical terminology, to presume the validity of their marriage the same way the Church does, and seek the assistance, seek the help, whether it be prayerful, spiritual, psychological, whatever, that they need to give that marriage every possible chance. If it ends in divorce, yes, every member of the faithful has the right to petition, to ask an ecclesiastical tribunal to take a look at the marriage itself and to find out whether it met the requirements of marriage in the Church. Tribunals rule both ways on those things. But what the Church doesn't want people to do is take those kinds of grave decisions into their own hands, be their own judge, their own jury, and so on, and instead to try to live in accord with Christ's teaching on marriage and the Church's teaching on marriage that I do means forever, till natural death.
Although in the United States, especially in other Western countries, there are fully developed tribunal systems.
Right.
Often in the developing world, this is less true.
Yes.
Is there something the Church can do, for example, in areas where people who are divorced and quite possibly were in invalid marriages, mm-hmm. but they really don't have mm-hmm. access to tribunals? Is there more that can be done in that regard?
There is. You're touching on a point that actually came up in a couple of rotal addresses by John Paul II. He pointed out that the faithful who are in divorced and sometimes even remarried situations, the faithful always have a right to know what their ecclesiastical status is. And that means that they have a right to an ecclesiastical tribunal hearing their case and weighing the evidence and reaching a decision. In the United States and in a lot of other Western countries, yes, the tribunal system is up and running. It hears cases. It says yes. It says no. But it functions. In a lot of the third world nations, they don't have accessible tribunals. They may even have a tribunal, but it only can hear a few cases a year. One of the things that we in more developed countries can do is actually send canonists who are willing to take out 6 months or a year of their life and go help set up tribunals. We can assist third world bishops in sending their priests and laity off to study canon law so they can come back and staff tribunals. Probably the best thing overall is to extend the Church's system of justice and not try to find ways around it.
Finally, you're not just a canonist here. You're also a layman here, mm-hmm. a father with children. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that the bishops understand the concerns of family men? Do you have any contact with the bishops regarding that aspect of your life? Are your concerns as a Catholic father being met by the bishops?
Yeah, I think they are. I think it's natural that bishops spend proportionately more time talking about, let's say, the training of priests or the training of catechists, because bishops are, among other things, professionals, and these are the people they work with on a professional basis. But more than one bishop from the floor of the aula has called for more attention to the role of men in family life, in society, and sometimes we men tend to get overlooked. I'm very comfortable with calls to focus more attention on male leadership because it's under pressure, it's under assault. And, you know, my mom used to say, when I go to Mass, you know, most of the kids go. When your dad goes, they all go. There's just something about that father leadership figure that I think bishops are aware of. And if they don't spend quite as much time talking about it, let's say, as they do about priestly formation, we don't take it personally.